The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Just what does this world really need? Does it need more graduates from some of the big universities? Does it need more cooperation between nations? Does it need better weather? Does it need more raw materials or foodstuffs? Does it need a solution to some of the big political problems? Does it need less crime? If you were to analyze really what this world needs the most, what one thing would you put your finger upon? What would you point out as being the one biggest and the most crucial need of mankind today? Well, Uthant, who, as you know, is Secretary General of the United Nations, has raised some poignant questions about that very need of mankind when he asked what element is lacking so that with all of our skill and our knowledge, we still find ourselves in the dark valley of discord and enmity. What is it that inhibits us from going forward together to enjoy the fruits of human endeavor and to reap the harvest of human experience? And he asked, why is it that for all our professed ideals, our hopes, and our skill, peace on earth is still a distant objective seen only dimly through the storms and turmoils of our present difficulties? Peace on earth, or earth in pieces, which one is it going to be? Now here we are rocketing around the corner of another year, and people are going to be streaming out of their homes and downtown, and the traffic jams are going to be fantastic, and you'll hear the tinkling of the bell, and you know what that means. And, of course, you'll be hearing all the complaints of the shopkeepers with their aching bunions and the extra help placed on during the Christmas season. For the people in Australia, they'll be telling their kids about how Santa comes down the river in a rowboat because it gets good and hot at Christmas time. I asked a man down there one time, as a matter of fact, how do you people in the land down under get by with observing a holiday that originated up among the Teutons and others in Europe? Well, it originated actually in ancient Babylon and Greece and Rome, as anybody knows who looks into it, but many of the customs that have since come along into the United States came from the Germanic peoples. And the Christmas time idea of Santa coming down the chimney and all this type of thing. And one man told me that his mother used to tell him Santa came roaring down the river in a rowboat. Wherever people live, in other words, regardless as to the season, whether you've got Bing Crosby singing White Christmas or not, you live in the outback or at Alice Springs or somewhere, I guess you just settle down for a good dust storm and maybe you make false snow out of cotton. But here we are at this time of fantastic shopping, and it's the season to be merry again, and people are going to be buying and selling and trading and exchanging gifts. But somewhere underneath all the tinsel and underneath all the millions of dying trees that are hacked out of the forest is the idea of peace on earth. Has there ever been one year in the entire history of human experience when that has been any more of a hollow, clanging gong than this year? Has there ever been a time in the entire experience of mankind when little children, rehearsing their parts in the play for school, coming out with their angels' wings and wands, are going to chirp, peace on earth, goodwill toward men? Has there ever been a time when that slogan was any more of a distant objective than it is today? Now people will go on saying it nevertheless, not realizing, of course, and that's one of the, I think, sad paradoxes of all, is that that very slogan comes from a mistranslation. Now, I think a lot of you know that it comes out of the Bible, so I won't try to embarrass anybody by quoting the Bible, but that's what they are quoting when they say peace on earth, goodwill toward men, except they've got a mistranslation. That's not what the angel is supposed to have said. Actually, if you check it, in some of the Bible helps and the Bible dictionaries and an exhaustive concordance, maybe Thayer's lexicon or something, look up the original Greek and even the marginal references in some Bibles tell you that what the angel actually said was, peace on earth among men of good will, that there will be peace on this earth when men themselves are men of good will. So what one thing does this earth need more than any other single thing? Well, it needs peace. That's what we need. We need safety and security and the absence of war. And then we need to get busy to gear all of these fantastic industries like the biggest employer today in the United States aerospace industry altogether, taking it in all of its component parts. And to remachine and to retool and to change and alter and rehabilitate all of industry and to make it for peacetime purposes. To get busy and to create that utopian dream and desire that man has always thought of from time immemorial, a world of absolute peace, a world where finally statements like, "Blessed are the peacemakers," will have some sort of substance and reality. Yet today, you hear the great leaders of this earth telling you that peace on earth is a distant objective, seen only dimly through the storms and turmoils of our present difficulties. Now, as people drain their bank accounts and drain their bodies of energy and strain their patience to the breaking point in the monstrous traffic jams midst all the tinsel, the glitter, and the glamour, the upset weather conditions, the smog, and the traffic jams, and go home to rub their aching bunions and say, "I'll never go shopping again." And in the meantime, the TV ads are coming out and telling you right now, the day after Thanksgiving, while you're still trying to get a barbiturate to take care of your overeating, you ought to be sure to go down and start a brand new bank account for next Christmas. I mean, the year after this one. One of these days, they're going to be observing that thing all year long. That's a fact. And, of course, if you were a storekeeper, you could get up and beat the gong and ring the bell with the rest of them. You'd really enjoy it if you could get people that excited about purchasing and buying and spending for that much of the year. Now, isn't it amazing that in all of this commercialism that comes along, that somewhere behind the scenes is the idea that anciently, long ago, there was a little baby boy who was born, who was named Jesus, and he was the Christ. People use his name today on the golf course or on the stage or in private conversation. They seem to think he was really somebody because they think that at least he's important enough that they ought to misuse his name to prove their disdain and contempt for him. So you've got to admit that even a lot of idiot, harebrained nitwits that go around with their mouths like a foul cesspool all the time, who have such a limited vocabulary and such a lack of expression, who are about as pedantic as one small nit of, well, you've got to admit that they are admitting that Christ was important, because their very placing of the emphasis on the name of Christ in their profanity and their cursing shows that they think he's important enough that they ought to try with every last fiber of their being to prove to others they don't respect him. But anyhow, behind all of this fantastic commercialism of this time of the year coming along is the idea that there was a little baby who was born to a virgin and that he was the Son of God. Now that boy grew up and became a man, and it's about time you thought of about the man and what he stood for, why he died, who it was that killed him, and what his death meant. And I'm not about to give you an altar call, so just hang on a minute. Now watch your wallet. Nobody's going to be grabbing for your wallet. People are used to that type of thing. Just relax. I'm not about to give an altar call. I'm not going to break out in prayers, and I'll guarantee you won't hear one bit of organ music on this program. I just want to talk to you about a few rather obnoxious and unpleasant factors that grip our Western world, a continuing trend today of mounting and increasing crime, of increasing inhumanity to human beings, of an increasing loss of purpose, and the complete and total absence of any sense of direction, personally, individually, or as a nation, or as a world today, and yet the very biggest holiday of the year comes along. More commercialism than at any other time, and underneath it all, behind it all, is the idea that there once was a man on this earth who stood for everything we seem to hate, who died for the very purpose and the cause of bringing this world ultimate peace, who qualified for a future position during his life and by virtue of his death, who came to confirm a legal agreement, who came to write the history of a documentary covenant or an agreement between certain peoples. And it all has to do with law. Now, I'm summarizing for just a few programs a whole series of broadcasts on the World Tomorrow program in which I have gone through every last one of the Ten Commandments, from the first right through the tenth. Talked about the law, the origin of it, when it was given, how it was given to ancient Israel, but how it existed way back before that, how it wasn't the law of Moses. We went through all ten. We kept asking what's wrong with them and Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody everywhere kept them? And what about the great institutions that are established on this earth today to bring us world peace? The greatest single attempt of mankind has been the United Nations. And we've investigated what its leaders have said about their ability to bring the world peace. And as I asked at the beginning of this program, what is the one greatest need of mankind of this world today? Well, maybe you could say it many different ways, but certainly just to state peace. The absence of war. That's the thing that must come first of all. Anything else short of that is just not going to do it, that's all. This world has either got to find some solution to its problems, it's got to achieve a time of absolute peace, and the absence of all these wars, or else mankind is doomed to cosmicide, that is total extinction of the human race. Now, Secretary General U Thant sent special greetings not so long ago to ceremonies in London marking the 20th anniversary of the opening of the first UN General Assembly. It was back in January, so it has been about a year now, hasn't it? And he said in the years since that opening, the United Nations itself has become an agency for action rather than just discussion, but he said still, none of the fundamental problems of 1946 has been solved in 1966. Common strands tie the two periods together, he suggested. Above all, he said, there are still the political differences between great powers, still the awful implications of nuclear armament, still the intolerable inequality in the distribution among the peoples of the world of the benefits of scientific and technological development, and still, indeed, man's inhumanity to man that press most strongly upon the destinies of all of us. Old, rotten, cheating, lying, stealing, selfish, lustful, depraved, bestial, conniving, brutish, carnal human nature still hasn't been changed, and so the world hasn't really been changed, except everything is just sort of more. More money, more people, more cars, more wars, more death, more riots, more crime, more divorce, you name it, there's more of it. We're living in a time where more seems to be the theme and the keynote of our day. Yes, as U Thant asked, what element is lacking? I'll tell you what's lacking. What's lacking is some element in the very heart and the mind of man that would make him believe in laws that would produce and be the cause of world peace. But most people just don't believe in any such laws as that. Now, I've been talking about the Ten Commandments. And in attempting to begin to get ready to summarize all of those ten, to recap even the beginning deep and disturbing trends in this Western society would take another 20 or 30 programs. I don't have time for that. But just by quoting a few statements from leaders on the subject, maybe you can get a real quick view of what's happening to us and the worst trends that are stand right now in the Western world. The rising crime, the mounting divorce, the tidal wave of public and civil disobedience, the demonstrations, the increasing attacks on police officers. So as I said, to try to summarize it all, it would take several broadcasts. But listen to the words of a few leaders in the field. Speaking in Washington, D.C. on November 14th of 1966, Orlando W. Wilson, who was superintendent of Chicago Police, said, and I quote his words, "We are living in an age which defies comparison. Some characterize it as a time of social revolution and individualism, but in all honesty, I think we must also characterize it as a time of lawlessness and irresponsibility. And what's more, the events which have become the hallmark of the times we live in, for example, civil disturbances, tend to reinforce and encourage a continuing attitude of irresponsibility." Former U.S. Attorney General Nicholas Katzenbach told the annual dinner of the YMCA in Greater New York that lawlessness of youth is the largest, most stubborn, and fastest growing source of crime in the nation. It could easily accelerate, he said then, into national tragedy. Actually, it already has. That's what Mr. Hoover's calling it. Mr. Katzenbach warned that one of every six boys under 18 has been taken to juvenile court for at least one offense. And I submit that's a shocking statistic. That, so to speak, every six young kids you pass in their early teens has at one time or another stood in front of a judge because of some infraction of the law. Now, he said he was speaking as chairman of the President's Commission on Crime and the Administration of Justice and as former Attorney General. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover said recently, "The United States wears a yoke of infamy, a yoke made of greed, hate, violence, apathy, and lawlessness." Now, why leave out Britain? I was quoting recently about the golden age of crime, an address by Lord Shawcross, a leading British attorney, at a luncheon on the Chicago Crime Commission, and he was talking about criminal figures and statistics in Britain, and he said they had a better than 50-50 chance of getting away with it, and even then, if they got caught stealing a car or something like that, only about a 50% chance of being indicted and then maybe sent up for the crime, his chances of acquittal were about even, 50-50. If he was a car thief, he only had one chance out of 10 of being caught. If he had committed a burglary, the odds were 6-1 in the criminal's favor. And so it's about the same wherever you look in our western world of more, our world of splendiferous plenty, of growing apathy toward the deep and disturbing trends that threaten to tear asunder our very society, of the mounting callousness and the ability of people to live with riotous and horrible conditions all around them. And, as Mr. Hoover said, the average American, and this is also true of the average Briton anymore, we just can't seem to get stirred up about it anymore. He said the flames of crime are threatening to consume the nation's social structure, but Americans refuse to face the danger. They see the flames of crime, of burglaries, murders, physical assaults, but to all intents and purposes, they immediately close their windows, forget about the problem, return to their day-to-day business, and he said, this is the danger of 1966. Well, how can you begin to summarize the problems that are in such tremendous magnitude that exist in our Western world today? You just can't. It would take a whole additional series of broadcasts to do it. But in this series of broadcasts on the Ten Commandments, we've gone step by step through all ten. What they say, how they're to be applied, whether they're applicable at all today, and what the New Testament says about them, whether they are practical in today's dog-eat-dog world. The Ten Commandments, if obeyed, if believed, if observed, practiced, and followed, would literally give this world exactly what it needs. Would, quite literally, usher in an era of absolute utopia on this earth. And that is a fact. I'll tell you something about the Ten Commandments. A lot of people who fancy themselves, well, what do they fancy themselves? It's hard to tell who's a man of the cloth and who isn't anymore because somebody's claiming to be a kind of a theistic undertaker. He says God is dead and somebody else is saying no, he's not. So people are shouting from their soapboxes and their pulpits, yes, he is, no, he isn't. Somebody else comes up with a statement, who is Christ? And he asks that kind of a question. It's becoming increasingly difficult to know whether a person is a theologian or just a golfer who missed a putt. You can't tell who's talking about who anymore. But at any rate, it's a fantastic statement. It's almost like a sick joke. But there are many people who fancy themselves teachers of the Bible, which in itself is a book about law, a book divided in two parts. A book that has to do with legal documents, the old will and the new will, and that involves the promise of people to keep a perfect law, and the added and the additional power and ability and strength given to them so they can. And yet, as incredible as it might seem, there are people who believe the Ten Commandments are about the most rotten law that has ever been given to mankind. Now, you talk about a dumb idea, a crass idea, or what? Now, really, we've gone through them on this program. If you've turned in late, well, then I'll apologize. I'm sorry you didn't hear all the broadcasts that went ahead, but we have asked every time that we came to one of these Ten Commandments, what is wrong with them? What's wrong with a commandment that says, thou shalt not steal? Let me tell you something about the Ten Commandments. Regardless as to what you think about them, you would sure feel a lot better if your neighbor kept them. What if you lived next door to, across the street from, just behind, and around the corner from? If you were surrounded by neighbors of yours who worshipped one God, who didn't believe in idols, who did not believe in swearing and never told lies, who believed in absolute honesty and integrity, who realized the great worth and value of the name of Christ and of God and never took it in vain, didn't even believe in vain repetition, didn't even believe in watered-down phrases like Jiminy Crickets or Gee Whiz, and other statements that usually have a sort of a J-C in them, which people think is not cursing, believed absolutely in observing and keeping as holy and sacred the only day that God gave man to lay off on as the day that is God's, not man's, believed in honoring and deeply obeying Their parents, grandparents, all patriarchal people of the white snowy head, believed in absolute honesty and integrity, would never steal, would never lie and cheat and connive. You could trust him with your property. He wouldn't covet and lust after your wife, your daughter, or your son. He wouldn't be a pervert. He would be absolutely honest and filled with integrity and goodwill towards you. Now, I mean, regardless as to what kind of a character you are. Now, maybe you're not a real character. Maybe you're a solid character. You know, it's like the colored fellow who was caught and brought before the judge for assaulting a policeman. And the judge looked at him sternly and he said, "Did you assault this policeman?" He said, "Well, yes, I did." And he said, "Well, why did you do it?" He said, "Well, because this patrolman called me a black rascal." And the judge thought, "Well, no wonder he assaulted him." And the Negro looked up to him and he said, "Look, judge," he said, "what if somebody calls you a black rascal? What would you do?" The judge said, "Yes, but I am not black, am I?" The Negro said, "Well, no, sir, but supposing they called you the kind of a rascal you is, what then?" Well, now, you know, he had a real good point there, because all of us are some kind of a rascal or another, you know. Deep inside of our own human nature, we're all a pack of rascals. And when you stop to think about that and analyze it a little bit, it's a little bit of a treatise on human nature. The colored fella couldn't contain himself. It never happened. It's just a story to illustrate a point, but I'd heard it, so I couldn't help but read it. That's one of my problems. I think things I have. I think they've got a part to them, right? So, all you've got to do is to take a good long look at human nature and realize that is inside every last one of us. So regardless as to what you think, and regardless as to your attitude toward law, to what kind of a rascal you may be, wouldn't you love it if all of your neighbors were that kind of people, where they believed and practiced every last tenet, every last facet of the Ten Commandments, and were diligently living by them? They didn't believe at all in sexual promiscuity and license. They didn't believe at all in any type of shading of the income tax report, or even cheating at cards if you had them over. And they didn't believe in gluttony. They wouldn't eat too much. And they didn't believe in borrowing your things and never bringing them back. And they didn't believe in making eyes at your wife or your daughter. But they were just diligently believing in and observing and living by the Ten Commandments. Now, I don't care. It's like the colored fellow said to the judge, what kind of a rascal you is. We all might be, you know, deep inside, a little hostile toward the law. We just are. That's our nature. It makes no matter, just for the point of the argument at hand and the subject I'm discussing. What you might think about law, you would sure be a whole lot happier person if you were surrounded with people who kept the Ten Commandments. You've got to admit it, whether you want to admit it or not. Now, maybe you'll justify your own cheating. I got a letter the other day. It'd tear your hair off to read it. It's amazing. Fella said, "Well, he took great exception to what I said about the command, thou shalt not steal, and about all this shoplifting and stealing from the government." And he pointed out what I had said about having been on a military base and seeing all of the thievery and the crime and the pilferage and stealing going on. He said, "I'll tell you, if the armed forces ever get me and make me their slave, I'll steal from them." And he said, "I'd take things from them every time I got the chance, whether I needed it or not. He'd just steal it and take it and put it someplace else just to be taking it." So there. What a beautiful attitude. You know, it's epitomized by what Ufant said. "Why is it," he asked, "that for all our professed ideals, our hopes and our skill, peace on earth is still a distant objective, seen only dimly through the storms and turmoils of our present difficulties?" I'll tell you why it is. Human nature. Because human nature is contrary to law, and the great law that is the cause of peace. You know, there is such a thing as cause and effect, and we're not unaware of it. Cause and effect is very obvious. We see it all around us. There's a cause for every effect, and there's an effect for every cause. Whether it's a bouncing ball or eating too much or a sickness you contract some way or another. And it's about time we began to realize all of our sicknesses, miseries, mental turmoil, and unhappinesses, all of our crime and divorce, all of the international problems and the mounting worldwide problems on a scale that threaten the very continuance of civilization, are the direct result of a specific cause. And that cause is human nature and broken law. Laws which, if they are obeyed, form the cause of peace. Now, I asked at the beginning of this program, what does this world need most of all? It doesn't just need more college graduates. It doesn't need more money or less divorce or more marital fidelity. It needs all of those things. Sure, you bet it does. It needs those things badly. But above all, the one greatest and the single and the most critical need of all is peace. This world needs peace. A lot of people are going to be parading around and prating about peace pretty soon. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. As I asked before, have you ever known of a year in the history of mankind where that was any more of a hollow knell? Have you ever known of a time before in the history of man, knell, spelled K-N-E-L-L, by the way. Have you ever known of a time in the history of man before when that made any more of a hollow clanking sound when somebody will come out on the stage in a little Christmas play and say peace on earth? You might just think, or earth in pieces, which? Because that's where we are. Well, I'm going to show you next time, and especially for the benefit of any of you that might think the Ten Commandments are done away, that the Bible is a book about law. A book about two contracts, two wills, or two testaments. One given to a physical nation, Israel, involving the promise of those people to keep a perfect law. You're going to be amazed at what it says about that law, its perfection, and how they were to be educated to believe in it and to keep it, but how they broke their promise. And the second great contract, the New Testament of the Bible, given to a spiritual nation, so to speak, a kind of an analogy is made, drawing the analogy of a young man about to marry a bride. And the church, or that spiritual nation, and again, that is theological talk perhaps, but that's the way the Bible speaks of it, is a spiritual analogy in theological language talking about the church as the bride of Christ, accepting certain conditions or entering into a covenant, an agreement to keep the Ten Commandments. That's what the new covenant is all about. I will prove it to you. Let me tell you something. God, who does exist, is going to rule you. Yes, he is. He's going to rule you. He is going to rule you sooner or later. And I'll guarantee you that's one of the greatest outstanding facts you will ever hear assail your ears. God Almighty is going to rule you. Now, if you want to hear about approximately when and how, then tune in for the next broadcast and I'll show you. And I'll show you how it's an inexplicable thing, almost, as I said, like a modern sick joke, that somebody could remotely begin to believe that the Ten Commandments have been done away. It doesn't make a bit of sense when you investigate it in the light of what the Bible says. In the meantime, write for the book that I've announced on the Ten Commandments and see it expounded, explained, and magnified in common, everyday language to show you exactly how they need to be obeyed and applied today and the blessings and benefits that come as a result of it. And then ask for this article on Does the New Covenant Abolish God's Law? Does the New Covenant, just think of the words New Covenant and ask for that article. Does the New Covenant Abolish God's Law? And also write for the book that's on Does God Exist? And the proof of the Bible and the Plain Truth magazine, the current number. It's free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.